We will plan ahead. We will protect our bodies and fight back by moving. Lace up our sneakers and grab our tennis rackets. We will bowl. We will do our morning laps and bike ride through Saturday afternoon. We will walk our dogs around the block. We will pass up the elevator and proudly take the stairs. Because arthritis can't beat us if we beat it first. In the fight against arthritis, you need a weapon. What's yours? To learn more, visit us at fightarthritispain.org. This message brought to you by the Arthritis Foundation and the Ad Council.
This is Rhode Island's longest-running financial talk show, Money Talk, with Don Sola. With market insights and so much more, talk to Don now at 437-5000 or 1-888-345-0790. This is Money Talk with Don Sola on AM 790 WPRV.
And we welcome you to the Money Talk program, everybody. I'm Don Sowa. Delighted to have you with me, especially on a good day. Yeah, I mean, so many times I come in on a Monday and I have to just sometimes have to bring you bad news. But, you know, I love it. I love it when, you know, the week starts after. If you've had a lousy week last week, well, today looks like one of those better days. Now, does today's upside market activity suggest to you that the rest of the week's going to be good? That would be a bit of a stretch. It doesn't mean it won't be. But there has been some suggestions, depending upon who you listen to, that some of what happened today was, number one, because some political news that had been putting pressure on the stock market, such as issues related to potential for a trade war between the United States and some of our primary trading partners, including even, you see, people don't realize China is, yes, on a lot of levels an adversary, but they're also a major, major trading partner, probably the largest a real dollar value issue in the global trading markets, and they're also among the largest investors in the United States. They buy more of our bonds. So when the president wants to raise $1 trillion to buy stuff, who do you think is going to buy those bonds? That's the way they do it, is to issue bonds, and hopefully somebody will buy them. Well, among the largest buyers of those bonds are Japan and China. I was looking at a story today, and I thought I'd share it with you, at least to start off tonight's program, because it talks about the psychology of money a little bit, which we do mention on occasion here on the Money Talk program. But it's a personal story. It's a real person. It was actually a writer named Catherine Vassell, who's a writer with CNN, published it earlier today. I just thought it was a really, really cool article talking about really how you handle market volatility when you are getting very, very close to retirement. So, yeah, I often advise listeners that we don't really want to talk about market timing. Market timing is foolish and dangerous and most often costly. And most of our listeners here on the show, especially here in Southern New England, given our demographics, are long-term investors. Even if they're in retirement, whatever decisions they're making about how they manage their money, it'll have a long-term orientation to it, unless you're already well into your 90s. But, I mean, most people I know who are retirees, including clients of mine, and a great many listeners to this program, I understand, are not in their 90s. Some of them are. But, I mean, large number, other than their 60s, 70s, and 80s, if you are in retirement already. So there's a psychology that says, you know, the goals for which you are managing your money, investing your money, the goals will change as you get older. Your need for the money will affect how you invest. But, you know, we're looking at a specific couple. Robin, the lady's name is Robin, and her husband. There's a plot of land sitting down in North Carolina that they purchased a while back, and it's their hope and their plan for retirement was to build their retirement home on that piece of property. Now, of course, she's hoping to retire probably in about 3 years, which would put her right around her age 63. And from that point, head south. They're living in Connecticut right now to enjoy what they believe to be, what is currently, a lower cost of living there. Down there in the Carolinas, the weather, although they have, you know, some shifts here and there from time to time, but on average in a typical year, they're going to have a more balanced, dependable changes in the weather. Makes it a little bit more comfortable, less likely to have major snowstorms, even though you might get a few here and there. The couple, they have been socking away money as much as possible as they can into their retirement accounts. In this particular case here, Robin, the young lady who is now right around age 60 right now, she's meticulous. She's been thoughtful about putting money away, thoughtful about tracking everything on a spreadsheet, checking the balances frequently, a task that has been enjoyable for the last several years, literally since 2009, 2010. With a few minor little bumps along the way, she said it's been a pretty good time to be an investor. And making the following and tracking of her investments on an ongoing basis with some regularity to be a little bit of a hobby for her. And, of course, when the market has a big up day, especially following a lousy down day, but when she has big updates, she gets all excited. And I guess being excited is a good thing, especially if you're an investor. But again, you've been doing it in a period in which you watched the market come off of a recession and a bear market in 07, 08. And starting in 09, start to move towards record highs, a pretty steady grinding climb all the way. But as you might well imagine, there's always a but, right? The stock market's recent volatility, of course, has made checking her balances as often as she does, of course, a lot less fun. In 1 week in early February of this year, the value of her accounts were down about $30,000 just in 1 week. Now, we actually saw a period in February. Now, we had a great January, so she probably loved January, right? But then February came along. The S&P 500 actually dropped a little over 10% in just a matter of a week or two. So she's probably looking at her account right around that period. And I can imagine that would have given her some gas, I would think. She said herself, she admits, that a tear slid down from her eye, looking at her on her laptop or her tablet. Of course, she's referring to her balance after the worst 2 weeks that the Dow had experienced. For the month of February, they were down about $18,000. So, yes, it was up and down. So even with a bad week, like a $30,000 decline at 1 week, overall for the month, they were down about 18. Not a good thing either, but, you know, certainly not as bad as 30. Now, the couple are planning to use some of their retirement funds to build their home down south. And, of course, the recent performance that she's experiencing on Wall Street pretty much has been tough on her nerves as well as her husband's. When things swing wildly like that, it's upsetting. And of course, the issue is it's not about the issue of wealth. It's about control. Her big issue is that feeling that you're upsetting the apple cart and that you don't have a lot of control in that particular example. Now, the recent dips that we've experienced in the markets, back some kind of painful memories in her mind. She's recalling that having been an investor for a long time, back in 2008, which we just related to, which was smack dab in the middle of a recession, where you had a global meltdown of the financial services and the fixed income markets especially, which, of course, pulled the stock market down nicely. Of course, people talk about the market being down 50% and a 401k plan becoming a 201k. And I've mentioned many times here, for those of you who are regular listeners to the show, that it's very rare to find anybody who lost half of their money in 2008. But there are plenty of people that lost a third, 35, 36% maybe. You would have had to have all of your money in the wrong place, and all of it literally in the stock market, to have lost half of your money. I don't actually know anybody personally who did that, but I know some people that lost maybe 44%, but they would even say, hey, yes, but I'm an aggressive investor and I got plenty of time. Well, that's fine. The real discipline in 08 and early 09, though, would be to have at that moment understood that at some point it's going to start to rise and go back up and recover. And in order for you to recover with it, you have to be in it. Now, that's the painful decision. But losing $50,000 was a significant piece of their investment pie. At that particular time, she worried that it will be harder to recover another big loss of that. Now, remember, it's not a loss. It's a decline in value. It only becomes a loss if she pulls out, locking in the lower value. Apparently, she probably didn't do that. It was a few years ago now, a decade, and now she's 3 years from retirement instead of 13 or 14, yeah, she's going to view it a little bit differently. Now, her current portfolio is about 60% in stocks and about 40% in bonds. Now, is that appropriate for somebody age 60? Yeah, probably. Not far off. That's not too far off. It's impossible to try to time the market. Even she admits that. And to sit there and watch your money jumping up and down and at any given moment feeling so out of control, it's hard. But if you take it out and it goes up, that's not good either. That's going to drive you just as crazy because you're feeling you've missed out on an extraordinary opportunity for recovery. She hasn't made any major changes yet to her investment strategy, despite the fact that we've had a lot of volatility. And I'm sure on a day like today, she's probably delighted that she did, in fact, leave it alone, at least for the time being. The question will be is, what does she do now? Hey, listen, you're listening to the Money Talk program. I'm Don Soa here on AM 790, your home of talk and business. Welcome to a brand new week. It's Holy Week here in, well, all over the world, I guess. And for those of you who are Christians, we do appreciate the importance of this time for you. I'm going to give you a heads-up warning going forward. Thursday night, we actually have, I believe it's open, my opening day at Yankee Stadium, I think. Well, so that wipes us out. We won't be here for Money Talk, you know, on Thursday. That's Thursday, Holy Thursday. I can't believe the Yankees are playing. But what are you going to do? I'm going to take a quick break now. We'll be right back with more Money Talk, so stick around.
Sponsored by 24/7 Diabetic Health Hotline. Attention diabetics, now you can get your testing supplies delivered to your home. Free delivery and a free meter upgrade. Call the U.S. Medical Supply now, 800-430-7923.
This is the Bloomberg Green Business Report. Imagine if your whole town was at risk of being swallowed by rising seas. Global warming is creating that threat along the Louisiana coast. Not in the abstract future, not a decade from now, but now. The threat to the entire bayou community of Isle de Jean Charles is so imminent that officials have begun spending nearly $12 billion on land in a nearby parish to resettle everyone, about 80 people. Groundbreaking is set for next year, though some residents fear having to wait through another hurricane season. The island already has lost about 98% of its land as climate change lifts sea levels. Most are Native Americans whose uprooted ancestors found swampland that the state considered uninhabitable and made it their home. Chris Brunet would stay if he could.
This is where it started. This is where I was raised. This is where home was. This is where I belong.
One Louisiana community redevelopment official says most would rather not leave, but the island is, in effect, leaving them. That's the Bloomberg Green Business Report. I'm Bob Moon.
I'm Jay Farner from Quicken Loans. Choosing the right mortgage lender means choosing much more than just a rate. Only Quicken Loans has earned 12 J.D. Power Awards. No other lender comes close to that level of client satisfaction. And we invented Rocket Mortgage. It gives our clients a simpler, hassle-free way to get a mortgage completely online in minutes. No one else has anything like it. And our people, each one of our 17,000-plus team members throughout Detroit, Cleveland, and Phoenix provides absolute client satisfaction each and every day. So why would you go anywhere else to get your mortgage? Go to America's number one online lender. If working with America's number one online lender matters to you, call Quicken Loans today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com for the best mortgage experience on earth. That's 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com.
For J.D. Power award information, visit jdpower.com. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumeraccess.org, number 3030.
Does your dog itch, scratch, stink, or shed like crazy? Come to Dynavite for help. Order a 90-day supply of Dynavite. Pick up two bottles of LicoChops, get the third bottle free. New improved LicoChops with omega-6, omega-3, vitamin E, and now 6 extra direct-fed microbials. Even better for the digestive tract and immune system. And dogs love it. Try LicoChops. Buy two, get one free. This is Henry Lukasevic for Dynavite.
DINOVITE.com.
Spearfishing has or will strike your business, wreaking havoc on your employees, brand, and your bottom line. Spearfishing can't be stopped by traditional email security solutions because messages appear to be legitimate from your boss, a trusted colleague, or a vendor asking you to wire money, confirm login credentials, or worse. Barracuda Sentinel is artificial intelligence for real-time spearfishing and cyber fraud defense. Reclaim your email in minutes with zero impact on network performance. Visit barracuda.com/AI.
This is Money Talk with Don Soa, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
And we welcome you back to tonight's Money Talk program. I am Don Soa, delighted to have you here with me. I'm a certified financial planner professional, been doing business in this profession for over 30, almost 35 years. Gosh. Every time I say that, I realize how old I'm getting. More importantly, though, this is my 28th year on the radio here doing the Money Talk program right here in southern New England. So That's all because of you folks. I mean, if you didn't care about your money, if you weren't interested in these topics, we wouldn't be here. We wouldn't be still doing the show after all this time. But Monday through Friday at 5 o'clock, this is the time that we share with you. My colleagues and partners, Steve Beauvais and my daughter, Donna Allard. She's going to be with me tomorrow. She just came back from Santo Domingo, from the Dominican Republic. Yeah, but, you know, of course, immediately they get home, they get sick. I said, who'd go to think? But she assures me that she's going to be well tomorrow. So she'll be joining us, you know, at that particular time and tell us all about how she got that golden tan. They had a great time, though, and she's been working really, really hard this year. So she certainly deserved the time off. Now, that said, the psychology of money, the planning that you do changes as your circumstances change. So it's sort of... Well, I mentioned you obviously can't time the market, but, you know, to sit there and watch volatility occurring as the market gets higher and higher, especially as you're getting towards record highs. Everybody says, well, the market's at a record high. I said, well, you know, once it's recovered the loss that it experienced, the decline that it experienced during a bear market like it did back in 2007, 2008, well, then once it's gotten back to where it started, then anything beyond that is going to be an all-time high, right? A new record. So we're in that kind of a category. And yes, there's a little bit of a ceiling that the market bangs up against. And yes, there are sectors of the market that behave differently than others. Sitting tight with investments as they are, watching it gyrate, watching the market bounce around, it's really tough. I get it. We understand that. Whenever we try to give out fixed advice, we understand that it's sometimes easier said than done. Most financial advisors do warn against knee-jerk investment decisions. Somebody once said, I don't know, I've been watching my portfolio every day, and it's making me really, really nervous right now. I'm saying, of course it's making you nervous. You're looking at it every day. If you stop looking at it, you won't be as nervous. Matter of fact, a reporter years ago was interviewing the founding family of Fidelity out of Boston, Ned Johnson. And the question he said, if you could give one piece of advice, this is to Ned Johnson, to investors that you believe would dramatically affect the success of investors in a positive way. Now, you can understand this is a man who has created and is running, at that time especially, the largest mutual fund company in the world. Only been challenged in recent years by Vanguard, but they're still among the biggest players out there, especially in the retirement field. He says one piece of advice, though, that he knows for most investors would dramatically affect them in a very positive way. And his answer was, we would change the rules so that investment firms would send out portfolio account statements only once a year. So all investors would get just the year-end statement. They'd probably be marked through December the 31st, and they would get it right in the first week or two of, say, January. Now you say, well, why is that a good idea? That wouldn't be good. I mean, I imagine a lot of these people today who have their smartphones and their tablets and laptops, I mean, they're going to jump in there. They want the codes. They want a PIN number. They want to be able to go in and access their accounts multiple times during the course of the day, let alone every week or month or quarter or once a year. There was a time a long time ago when all of these statements would come out. They would be on paper. So, yeah, there was a practical side to this. And there were some entities, including some of the insurance companies in the variable annuity sector, they would send out statements once a year or maybe twice a year at a stretch. And the argument being, we're saving money for all of you by not charging extra administrative charges to produce, print out, and mail out all these statements to you folks. But then the regulators like the SEC stepped in, and for a very valid reason, by the way, they stepped in and said, no, we want you to send out statements. If you're the custodian for investment portfolios with registered assets, in other words, individual stocks, bonds, mutual funds, that sort of thing. If you are a custodian for them, we want you sending your client statements out quarterly. So every 90 days, they're coming out four times a year. Now, again, that doesn't deal well with what Ned Johnson was suggesting by saying, no, my once a year idea was about investor behavior. He says, if you're going to get it once a year, you're not going to be as inclined to be reacting and making short-term decisions for what may be long-term realities, long-term goals. But the regulators said, no, the issue we're talking about is the fact that we want to make sure that the information that reflects the client's accounts is correct. Things are bought, things are sold, shares. Sometimes maybe they use the wrong symbol. I mean, many mutual funds have five letters in their symbol, PNO, PX, or, you know, FDY, UX, things of that sort. And you just mix up one or two of those letters or those, and all of a sudden you get a completely different fund. If the wrong fund was chosen, typed in incorrectly, wherever, then you may end up owning the wrong fund, and that wrong fund may not do very well, and you're not even going to find that out until the end of the year, possibly, if you don't have a more regular statement. So, yeah, I kind of got the idea when the SEC or the FINRA or the NASD or the local folks dealing with, especially with the mutual fund business, they're saying, no, we want investors to have much more accurate, regular information to make sure that not only for the sake of the advisor who's trying to help out with them or the broker, but also that the client themselves will know and won't have to be chasing the people down, find out who made the mistake, because the mistake in the end, they should be made whole, right? Of course. But we want to make them whole as soon as possible. Sitting tight is tough. Somebody once said they should, that was Johnson talking about the once a year deal, but people will, again, use short-term information to make long-term decisions, and that's not a good thing. But now is really a good time here as we're coming to the end of the first quarter of 2018 after a fabulous year last year. And I just noticed the Dow Jones Industrial Average, even though it's only 30 companies, year-to-date it's down with all the volatility you've seen, of course, but it's down 2%. Not bad, huh? Not too bad. And actually in the last 12 months, so that would be March to March of last year, it's up over 17. That is really good. You might have intended to be maybe 60-40, 60% stocks, 40% bonds in your asset allocation. But, of course, the run-up that you saw last year and over a period of time could have tilted the weighting in your portfolio in favor of stocks, which it probably did. The equities market, so the stock market, have been outperforming bonds considerably, and over time they grow more. So what was a 60-40 split before, 60% stocks, 40% bonds, today could be much closer to 70-30 or 72-28, 72% stocks, 28% bonds. Is that still right for you, especially all these years later? It's not a set-it-and-forget-it type of psychology when you're dealing with asset allocations. The general rule of thumb is the closer that you are to retirement, and by the way, it's not specifically retirement. It's the closer you are to the point where you're going to need to use the money for something, whether it's, as in the case of the example I was telling the story here, the purchase of a home or the building of a home in retirement, or changing from a growth portfolio or growth with income as a secondary consideration, all of a sudden you now need your portfolio to supplement perhaps other sources of income you might have, whether it's Social Security or a small pension if you're lucky, or other sources of income. So you're shifting gears. You're shifting the focus of what the portfolio is needed to do. The more you favor bonds over equities, the general, you know, that will typically be true the closer you would get to the point where you need that money, such as retirement. Folks who are 5 years away from retirement, some certified financial planners, they recommend having about a 65 to 70% weighting in stocks if you've got about 5 years to go. Depending upon the time frame, that could be different. If leaving the workforce for good is still 10 years away or more, then you could be more heavily weighted in equities. I know people who would say, 10 years, you should be 100% in stocks. I don't think so anymore. If we have a major bear market and there's a sizable adjustment in valuations and other things, well, maybe there'll come a point where stocks are cheap enough where you might switch back to a 90 or even 100% weighting in stocks, depending upon how much time you have. 10 years or better may change your philosophy about how much risk you're willing to take. Now, I think nowadays, especially with the market as high as it has been, and as high as it continues to be, not anywhere close to the environment we were in late 1999, early 2000. I mean, the market was extremely overpriced at that particular time, and people were irrational in terms of how excited they were. Alan Greenspan said they were guilty of irrational exuberance, and I get it. But we are at what getting close to the highs here. So there's not as much wiggle room, and the low-hanging fruit in some cases has been picked. So you have to be a little bit more thoughtful about how much risk and volatility you're going to tolerate, especially if you're getting closer and closer to the point where you're going to need that money. I'm Don Sowa. You're listening to the Money Talk program here on AM 790. We're going to be right back, so please stick around. It's halftime right here on Money Talk.
Lean on me when you're not strong, and I'll be your friend. I'll help you.
If you're feeling low with nowhere to turn, call the Samaritans at 401-272-4044. It's free and confidential, 401-272-4044. This is Bill Withers. We all need somebody to lean on. When you do, the Samaritans are
Darren there. College, a former NFL Super Bowl champion, signed the most important contract of his life to serve in the Army National Guard.
The National Guard for me was a perfect fit. I've had a lot of military in my family. It's a big part of what my family's done for a long time. I want to go out there and make a difference. I want to be a part of something bigger than myself. I didn't find that in the normal day-to-day life. I didn't find that working behind a desk. I realized being hands-on and being a soldier was something that would keep me active, keep me outside, keep me in that team environment that I craved and that I needed so much. And then the opportunity to serve my community and serve my country was just icing on the cake. I wanted to be in Boise, Idaho. I wanted to be home. The National Guard gave me the opportunity to stay right where I was, serve my country and my community, and it was the best of both worlds. I grew up flying bush planes in Alaska with my dad. I was fortunate enough to get my pilot's license. I wanted to be in helicopters. I wanted to be a crew chief. The Army National Guard gave me a chance to fly helicopters now instead of fixed-wing aircraft.
To learn how to be part of the Army National Guard, log on to NationalGuard.com. Sponsored by the Rhode Island Army National Guard. Aired by the Rhode Island Broadcasters Association and this station.
Every day, the men and women of the United States Marine Corps demonstrate their commitment to defend the American way of life. Since 1775, we have served our nation as a force in readiness.
Get some rear security.
From combat operations to humanitarian assistance, in every corner of the world. No matter where the mission takes us today, or wherever our country needs us tomorrow, we always remember the land we call home. As Marines, we take a stand for each other, for our nation, for us all. The few, the proud, the Marines.
Why do we call it small business? Why not agile business, nimble business, dance circles around the big bulky behemoths business? Ooma Office, the small business phone solution, has a virtual receptionist to direct calls to the right extension and a mobile app to help you answer while away from the office. About all that's small really is the price, starting at only $19.95 a month. Visit Ooma.com, that's OOMA, or call 866-649-9377 to find out more. Ooma, the phone your small business deserves.
This is Money Talk with Don Sowa, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
And we're back with the Money Talk program. It's part two of our program tonight. Thanks for joining us. Talking a little bit about the psychology and some of the philosophy of what happens with you as an investor as you get closer and closer to a major target date in your life, such as retirement. If you're planning to leave the workforce for good, still 10 years away, as I said, you'd likely be more aggressive. You got the time. One way to help your, avoid too much heartburn, I guess, is the best way to look at it. Especially if you are still contributing into the market right now. If you are even a younger person who is funding a 401k or an IRA or some sort of a defined contribution type plan, is to use what the plan is designed to do. Remember, if you are working and your employer has a defined contribution plan like a 401k or a 403b or a 457 plan, they're taking money right out of your paycheck and putting it into a plan, and they're allocating the money based on how you tell them how aggressive you want to be, how much goes into stocks, how much goes into bonds. Again, if you've got the time, then you probably, since you are putting incremental, even amounts of money into the market with each pay period, every time you make a contribution into the plan, you're purchasing shares. Now, if the value of those shares, because the market's going down, if the share price goes down, your contribution that week, that month, is going to buy more shares. Regardless of market fluctuations, the program works. You're buying a predetermined number of shares on a set schedule by investing your money gradually that way over time and automatically, out of sight, out of mind. It can offer some protection. And matter of fact, you'd almost come to, if you understand how it's working, you're going to end up appreciating when the market does dip on occasion. Because it's the ups and the downs over time that allow dollar cost averaging to work, because in the end, when you do get to retirement to the point of your target, you're going to end up having more shares at a higher dollar price because you will have ridden through the ups and downs of the market, taking advantage of it. Having enough cash on hand also to avoid the idea of having to withdraw money to sell shares during market dips. In other words, needing the money at the wrong time can also be a problem. If you have enough cash, though, on hand, and that's going to be determined by your target, your time frame, and your goals, it can be pretty reassuring the closer you get to retirement. That means if you say you're 3 years away from retirement, maybe you increase the amount of money that you would have normally had in a money market type account or a very ultra-short bond fund, which is essentially money markets, cash-type portfolios that pay. Now, granted, they're going to pay you very, very little, but it's money that is safe and available to you. It's accessible. Now, the closer you get to actual retirement, the more you might increase that. And let's say if you knew that you were going to, by this point, hopefully you know enough about your budget to know what it's going to cost to be you in retirement. So if you had to live on your investments yourself on the portfolio, and you know you're going to need $3,000 a month to cover your bills, your fixed and discretionary expenses, then you're going to get, I'd say initially as you get it within 5 years, you might want to have 6 months of expenses put aside in these guaranteed short-term type investments like the money market. So if you were $3,000 a month, so maybe you have $18,000 or $20,000 in cash. There's your emergency fund. Now, by the way, it could be an emergency fund, yes, and the word emergency applies, but I also like to think of it once in a while as an opportunity fund. If some opportunistic thing comes along for you that's positive, you don't, again, have to go in and sell shares of holdings that are intended for growth down the road in order to meet a short-term need or a short-term opportunity. Now, as you get closer and closer to retirement, by the time you get to retirement, you may want to have as much as a full year or 12 months of expenses. So you went from maybe $20,000 up to $35,000 or $36,000 in cash, leaving the rest of it allocated properly. Now, we've never seen a period of time in the history of the market where we've had more than 3 or 4 years of negative returns, especially consecutive. If the market crashes the day you retire, of course, that's always a bad sign, right? But you don't actually need to touch that money, and you can live off of cash that you may be holding and allow the market to actually come back. So having a full year or even more in cash, depending upon your specific needs, will just put you in a more comfortable position. You won't have to sell shares at the wrong moment in order to accommodate what your monthly bills will be and your monthly expenses. In positive years, of course, you can start to replenish the buffer that you had in there. So if you spend down, my rule was always, if you spend down your emergency fund, say you had $36,000 at a full year's expenses or maybe more, $40,000, and then let's say you spend down over a bad period of the stock market. Let's say we have a market correction or a bear market that lasts maybe 6 months, and it can happen. While you've spent down $20,000, you still have about $20,000 in the account, but as the market turns and starts to go back up again, I would be inclined to start replacing some of the cash that you took out of your emergency fund, right? Until you get it back up to that $35,000, $40,000 that you started with. Now, from that point, you'll create a new plan from which you generate your monthly income. Reverse averaging is one of the terms we use, but we don't have time to talk about it on tonight's show. But it gives you some idea. Now, grouping your retirement savings into what we sometimes refer to as buckets once you actually retire, and investing them accordingly, that can also provide for you some peace of mind and manage some risk during a market, especially if you're at the top of a market or what you believe to be, with everybody out there talking about the top of a market. Well, what do? Well, the first bucket we talk about may be the cash bucket or a very, very low risk bucket. And when I say low risk, there's ultra short bonds. Now, ultra short bonds don't pay a lot, maybe 1.5% or 2%. dividend, but the share price doesn't fluctuate much, and it's going to give you a little bit more than a typical money market account would pay. But it's not going to have the kind of volatility that typically bond funds, intermediate bond funds or long-term bond funds would have. We don't need that level of risk here. But anyway, you may put enough money in that bucket once you're now generating, this is the allocation for the actual retiree, and you could put anywhere between 1 and 2 years of cash or ultra-short bonds into this particular bucket, including any other sources of income you might have, maybe part of that. You may consider that to be a, what else is, you have to calculate your part-time job if you have one. If you're fortunate enough, nowadays, that be the rare person that has a pension where you're sending a regular monthly, getting a monthly check, or even Social Security. All of this stuff is going to be, you'll have to think of that as part of your bucket number one, because it's what we call dependable sources of income. If pension and Social Security and maybe some cash from a part-time job is enough to pay your bills in a typical month, well, then I wouldn't worry about keeping an inordinate amount of money in cash or ultra-short bonds, but having some money in there and maybe 6 to 12 months of cash to cover emergencies is not a bad idea. Now, once you've actually got that in place and you've calculated that out, divide up the rest of your retirement savings into maybe time periods of retirement. The more time you have before you need the money, the more aggressive, of course, your investment strategy can be, you know, over the course of that period. The money you are going to need to spend, say, in the first 5 years, 10 years of retirement, that needs to be put perhaps in lower volatility allocations, a generally more conservative outlook. But the money that, you know, for age 70, 75, or even 85-year-old you to spend, you could actually still keep invested in a little bit more equity or stock-driven portfolio. Now, remember, all stocks are not created equal. You know, there are a great many what we call defensive stocks. There are a great many companies that are large blue-chip companies that pay out sizable dividends. These portfolios can go up and down. These stocks can rise and fall, but they are not going to be as aggressive as, say, technology or small-cap growth companies, which, granted, in a good period have much more upside potential, but in a volatile downside period are going to drive you crazy because they can bounce around a great deal. Even though, as history will show you, is over time, they will probably outperform the more defensive companies. But you may be in a more defensive period now that you're in retirement and likely would have you won't be earning a lot more money, especially if you should lose some. So for our example at the beginning of this discussion, the lady who wanted to build the house down in the Carolinas with her husband, she's about 3 years away from the target that she will need. She's keeping a very close eye, of course, right now on Wall Street. She did see some initial volatility in February. Then it bounced around a little bit more, and then she did see some recovery. But she said that if she were to lose, again, in the story I was reading, there was no indication of exactly how much money she had. But she suggested if she were to lose $50,000 to $100,000 in value in her account due to a correction or a bear market, she would likely at that point decide time to take a breather from the market to preserve what we have. She said she doesn't want to do that because she has seen the ups and downs and the mistakes that people do make when markets get bumpy. And she doesn't want to be a person constantly making those mistakes. But her attitude was always that if need be, and they did need a little bit more money than they had available when the time came to do the building, she said she could always continue to work if they had to, maybe even take a part-time job down in the Carolinas where they're building the house. Again, I would rather not have that be part of your general planning, the idea of having to work. But, I mean, in the end, it's always an option. And we're getting younger as we get older. I mean, I think we're 65 used to be the average age of retirement for previous generations. Well, age 70 is the new 65, I guess is the best way to look at that. Folks, we're going to take a quick break here on the Money Talk program. You're listening to AM 790, your home of talk and business. This is Don Soh. We're talking about the psychology of approaching retirement and how you change your thinking and maybe even your allocations with your money as you get closer and closer to those magic and very, very important ages and dates. I'm going to take a quick break. We'll be back with more Money Talk.
Sponsored by Tomorrow Sleep. Want an awesome night's sleep? Try a new Tomorrow hybrid mattress designed by sleep experts at Serta Simmons. Use code DRIVE for $125 off at tomorrowsleep.com.
If you are one of the millions of Americans with diabetes who have burning or tingling pain in your hands and feet, learn about new recommendations out on how to best treat diabetic nerve pain. A new guideline from the American Academy of Neurology finds several seizure drugs, antidepressants, and painkillers can help treat diabetic nerve pain. The strongest evidence shows the seizure drug pregabalin is helpful and may improve your quality of life. In addition, a portable pain therapy device called transcutaneous electric nerve stimulation, or a TENS unit, can also be helpful. Keep in mind, a doctor should ultimately decide which treatment is best to relieve the burning and tingling pain. For the complete list of Academy-recommended treatments for diabetic nerve pain, patient resources, or to find a neurologist near you, visit the American Academy of Neurology at AAN.com. That's AAN.com.
Does your dog itch, scratch, stink, or shed like crazy? Come to Dynavite for help. Order a 90-day supply of Dynavite. Pick up two bottles of LicoChops, get the third bottle free. New improved LicoChops with omega-6, omega-3, vitamin E, and now 6 extra direct-fed microbials. Even better for the digestive tract and immune system. And dogs love it. Try LicoChops. Buy two, get one free. This is Henry Lukasevic for Dynavite.
DINOVITE.com.
Spearfishing has or will strike your business, wreaking havoc on your employees, brand, and your bottom line. Spearfishing can't be stopped by traditional email security solutions because messages appear to be legitimate from your boss, a trusted colleague, or a vendor asking you to wire money, confirm login credentials, or worse. Barracuda Sentinel is artificial intelligence for real-time spearfishing and cyber fraud defense. Reclaim your email in minutes with zero impact on network performance. Visit barracuda.com/AI.
This is Money Talk with Don Soa, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
And we're back with the Money Talk program. Now, I did something a little bit different tonight. I started off with a story, one that probably may a number of you listening may be able to relate to, a person who has been saving for many, many years, had actually purchased some property down in South Carolina and was looking to build their retirement home down there. So part of their portfolio that they've been putting aside and investing in the market, in addition to their regular retirement plans that hopefully will be used to supplement their sources of income. But in addition to that, they had another portfolio that they were using that would hopefully have the resources to build the house down there. And they would love, of course, not to have to take out a mortgage. And, you know, right at this point, the individual was 60 years old and had a 3-year time frame. So a timely article in the CNN put together on their website talking about this particular person and talking to some financial planners to get insights as to what type of change in thinking may be appropriate. The individual had enjoyed a great many years since 08. Where the market was just going right up and saw substantial gains in value in their account, probably getting pretty excited about the prospect of building that dream house down there for retirement. Then all of a sudden, 2018 comes along, another great January, a follow-up from the previous year. And then February comes along, and boom, you're getting a tremendous amount of volatility. Now, March wasn't overall a terrible, terrible month, but we saw a lot of jumping up and down. Volatility last week was a terrible week in the market. Today was a spectacular day, bouncing back from last week's losses. Basically, it was all related to politics, trade issues with the United States and China, especially continuation of uncertainty coming out of the White House about what they want to do with tariffs and other types of trade policy. And the White House's policies suddenly were not consistent with what probably the majority of economists in the world and strategists were thinking based upon their experience and history. They're concerned that we might literally drive the economy into a recession if we have a trade war. And it might be a global issue, not just a United States issue. So, yeah, the markets react to that. The markets assign a value. They assign a risk to the political environment. Not so much the determination of what actually will happen under the Trump administration's trade policy, but dealing with the reality that we don't know what will happen And that's the biggest issue. The president and some of his advisors, whether it's his current, trade people in Navarro, who's one of his trade talk leaders, heading up that department for him, they have no qualms at all about tariffs and that type of aggressive planning. And Bob, and possibly not, giving filling the president's head with the idea that even though he has always felt that he could work better deals than the United States government has made over the last few decades, maybe he could have, but he has this sense. The one sense he doesn't have is that he doesn't understand the world and the linkage in the diplomatic world and how trade policy does affect international relationships that we have related to military considerations, related to political considerations when you're negotiating worldwide issues. He doesn't even believe that there's global warming. I don't know where you get that idea. Well, anyway, the Dow today had a better day. Obviously, some information came out, and the Dow was up about almost 700 points, closed about 670 points. Microsoft was the best performing stock in the index. The S&P gained about 2.7% to bounce above its 200-day moving average. Technology, financials, they were all leading the markets higher. NASDAQ was the best sector overall with the technology 3.25% higher. Amazon and Apple were the leaders in that particular category. Financials rose sharply as well. The financial select sector spider, XLF, was up about 3.2%. The XLF posted its biggest one-day gain since November of 2016. Now, the Financial Times reported that China had actually offered to buy more semiconductors from the United States to help cut its trade surplus with the U.S. shares of Qualcomm and Intel. They rose as part of that 3.5% and 6% respectively on that particular news. The Wall Street Journal reported that the U.S. and Chinese officials are working to improve U.S. access to the Chinese markets. Now, that may be part of the issue we have in terms of an imbalance in our trade imbalance with China. Like I said, there's a lot of U.S., a lot of Chinese products come into the United States that are bought here, but there are rules within China and restrictions there in terms of trade that make it difficult for U.S. Product manufacturers to actually sell our products there. Although the bigger problem I think we have with China is dealing with intellectual property rights. They don't tend to have a tremendous amount of respect for them. And actually, strangely enough, we're going through the same problems with China today in the 21st century as we did in the late 20th century with Japan. Japan had that same tendency. They would take an American idea, like, say, the transistor radio. They would take it back to Tokyo, take the thing apart, and then come up, make a slight change, a minor change in the design of it, and then file a new copyright, pretending it's a brand new invention, and then sell Japanese transistor radios all over the world, cheaper than we can do it here in the United States. But anyway, investors have apparently recognized that a trade war is in no way, probably in no one's best interest, and therefore a number of individuals started to say it's less likely than people think. Specifically, the president merely wants to fulfill a campaign promise, while China will only enact token countermeasures to appease its citizens. Now, that's according to analysts like Jeremy Klein, who's a chief market strategist over at FBN Securities, and a number of academics who understand the trade relationships with countries like China. Markets overseas also jumped quite a bit today. In Asia, some indexes rose after news surfaced that the United States had agreed to actually excuse South Korea from steel tariffs, like on aluminum and steel. And what's happening now, it appears that the threat of a lot of these tariffs is really the Trump administration's first gambit as part of trying to work out trade arrangements and sort of new deals that, so you start out with a threat and then suggest that they can back off from that. It's like saying, going into somebody and saying, hey, I'm going to kill you. And then the person says, oh, please don't do that. And they come up with an argument. Then you say, okay, I'll tell you what, I'll only cut off your arm. And all of a sudden, the person's there thanking you for only cutting off their arm. That's sort of the Trump psychology of trade, I guess. But Wall Street finished Friday's session deep in the red, the Dow dropping about a little over 400 points by the close, now ending its lowest level since the month of November and finishing in correction territory at that particular point. That was the Dow, 11.6% down from its 52-week high. The S&P 500 ended Friday's session just outside of correction territory. Now, keep in mind, a correction is a 10% drop from the high. But here we are now. We're getting towards the end of March. But year to date, the Dow Jones Industrial Average, which is from January 1 to the present, the Dow is actually down about 2% for this year. But again, it's up about over 17 since since March of last year. So it's been a pretty good 12-month period overall, despite the volatility. So having a couple of several bad weeks is probably not a big surprise. Now, last week the president signed an executive memorandum that would potentially inflict tariffs on Chinese imports, maybe tariffs of up to as much as $60 billion. I'm not sure exactly where those numbers come from, but the president seems to feel that that's a relatively reasonable number to reimburse the United States potentially for infringements in its copyrights and a whole series of other infractions. The Chinese, of course, retaliated with their own set of levies, you know, drawing up a list of about 128 U.S. products that could be possible retaliation targets, including soybeans and corn and a lot of other grains that we import a lot of to China. Now, the S&P 500 is having some difficulty keeping its head above water this year, according to Jack Ablin, who's with Crescent Wealth Management. While fundamentals are actually conducive for growth, policy uncertainties, which is the big issue right now, it's all about Washington now, policy uncertainties related to trade are keeping investors off balance. Investors will vote with their money. That's one of the phrases I've always used probably for decades. Investment markets are volatile because people are making decisions with their money. They're voting with their money, not based on what they think always, but oftentimes based on how they feel. When the markets have reached all-time highs, feelings become stronger elements to investment decision-making. When markets have ups and downs and bumps and move sideways, that kind of volatility also creates some uncertainty, and we do not like uncertainty in the market. Social media firms continue to be under fire, of course, as abuse of people's data remains a key issue. A lot of analysts are trying to look at individual companies that may be affected by the problems that Facebook is having. Last week, reports emerged alleging that Cambridge Analytica, an analytics company that was involved with, of course, the elections in the last presidential election, had gathered data from about 50 million Facebook policy profiles without the permission of the users. That stock tanked more than 10% last week alone, Facebook, pressuring the broader tech sector in general. There's a lot of linkage between Facebook and a lot of other companies. That data finds its way to a number of different applications all over the tech sector. Facebook has since come out to apologize, of course, and try to rectify the problem. There's still concerns, obviously. Facebook shares dipped into bear market territory after the FTC, or Federal Trade Commission, announced its investigation of the company and their data practices. Well, we'll just have to wait and see. Obviously, this feeds into the whole idea of people investing their money based on how they feel. Well, we'll see how we feel as the week goes on. In the meantime, I'll be back with you tomorrow. Possibly Donna Allard will be here as well with Get Back to Basics Money Talk right here on AM 790. In the meantime, you have a good evening.
It's 3 p.m., and you just ran out of ink. You have a report due end of day, which is 2 hours from now. You can't push the deadline because end of day means end of